Welcome back to Canna Week, brought to you by New Frontier Data, where we deliver the week's top headlines on cannabis and hear experts weigh in on the impact these stories are having on the industry. I'm your host, Heather Wickline. Today, we are going to continue our discussion of the evolution of the hemp industry. As we know, hemp is an incredibly versatile plant. And as discussed in New Frontier Data's most recent report, the U.S. hemp market landscape, cannabinoids, grain, and fiber, hemp has potential application in paper, consumer textiles, and many, many industrial products. So to help us dig in, we've got an expert on the line today in hemp fiber. Please welcome Eric Singular. He is the Director of Communications and Business Development at International Hemp. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure to be here. And thank you, New Frontier Data, for being the best aggregator for data, which is so desperately needed in the U.S. hemp industry, particularly for grain and fiber as it relates to me. I'm always finding excellent information that helps me make informed judgments by being an avid reader of your material.
Well, I'm going to pass on those thanks to our next two guests that are our internal team. First up is Trevor Jan Grody. He is our hemp industry analyst and a very big hemp fiber enthusiast. Trevor, thank you for being here.
Awesome to be here. Thanks, Heather.
And next is our Chief Knowledge Officer. He's our fearless leader of the research team here at New Frontier Data. Please welcome Mr. John Kagiya.
Delighted to be back, Heather. Thank you.
Perfect. Well, there is a lot to cover, so we're going to dive right in. So, Eric, I'm going to start with you since you are the expert. There is a lot of discussion and excitement around the use of hemp fiber for industrial products. What are a few examples that you can tell our listeners that they may not be aware of that for hemp fiber in the industrial products?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's overly kind of you to characterize me as an expert on hemp fiber. I'm just lucky enough where I get to work in a position where I kind of sit in this interesting place between the seed providers, the genetics providers for fiber varieties that have been historically cultivated in Europe for fine fibers, and the American farmer. And I spend a lot of my time as the director of communications for International Hemp in conversations with farmers here in the U.S. who are interested in adding hemp either for grain or fiber production into their crop rotation for the most part. And, you know, one of the things that we need really in this country in order for the fiber industry to continue to grow is true expertise. And that is really going to come, you know, in a couple different ways. It's going to come from an agronomic perspective of people really growing hemp as it is supposed to be grown for fiber, which I really don't think at this time in this country we've really seen a lot of. Really high planting rate for hemp fiber seed, and then harvesting techniques that would be optimal for particularly the long bass fiber applications. The other thing that is just going to be really imperative is the research and development, which has been kind of the tone and kind of where the industry, I think the fiber industry here in the U.S. has kind of existed for the last couple of years, is people doing small scale production really to just try to cut their teeth. And the processing infrastructure that's now being built out across the country, you know, we just saw that the Alabama-based Basscor processing facility was able to raise nearly $3 million of investment capital for the work that they're doing with hemp fiber processing is a good sign. And it just shows that, you know, while this might not be the year of crazy hemp fiber production in this country, it probably shouldn't be until we really have a more assured supply chain. But the, you know, there are so many sectors around the short and long fibers that come from the hemp stock that are starting to develop. And it's interesting to see them develop where it makes sense that they would. You know, for example, in Texas, where cotton is such a big crop, it makes sense that they're adopting hemp fiber. And it makes sense in Michigan, for example, where so many plastic composites come from, that they're really looking at hemp, the short fibers from hemp as a biocomposite, as an ingredient for a bioplastic. So there's a lot of exciting things happening. And while a couple of months ago, I might've told you that this was the biggest, I think it still is the biggest year for hemp fiber. I think this is really a year where people really had high expectations. but it's a year where we're realizing that we might need to walk before we run. And that's probably a good thing so that we don't see, as New Frontier pointed out, a CBD 2.0 situation where we suffer from a major oversupply.
Right. Well, Trevor, you and I have talked offline because I just find this very fascinating and I always want to pick your brain. You know, we just heard Eric talking about, you know, Texas and Michigan, Alabama. What do you think the challenges are currently being faced with producers right now in the U.S.?
Well, there's a bunch, but the two big ones are a lack of infrastructure and a lack of product development. So on the infrastructure side, there's still very few primary processors. There's very few operations capable of doing decorticación. And there's almost no secondary processing. You know, once the fiber has been decorticated, depending on what product you're using it for, it has to go through secondary processing, has to go through wet processing, degumming, all this stuff. And there's almost none of that being done in the U.S. right now. And that really limits the supply of fiber. And because the supply of fiber is limited, it also limits innovation, because if you're not growing a lot and you're not iterating and you're not improving fast enough. The other big issue is product development. The real gatekeepers in this industry are the manufacturers, you know, the people who are actually going to take the processed hemp fiber and from processors and put it in their product lines. So there's a big lack of standardization in the hemp fiber industry because it's so new. And that makes it really hard for these manufacturers to do any kind of product development because they can't get a consistent fiber from processors to do it with. So that makes it really hard to do product development, and it makes it hard for farmers to find end markets.
All right, Trevor, what's the solution? How are we going to change it? How are you going to fix it?
I wanted to get Eric's take on that, actually, about specifically about the standardization issue. You know, the hemp fiber industry is very new in the U.S., but it's older other places. China and Europe have been doing this for a long time. And, you know, I wonder what you think, Eric, about the standards that exist in those places and whether or not they could be imported wholesale to the U.S. or whether or not, you know, U.S. operations are going to have to come up with their own stuff.
Excellent question. And it's funny because we have a really good relationship with one of the oldest hemp research institutes in the world, which is the Institute of Natural Fibers and Medicinal Plants in Poland. And, you know, there's a very interesting history around both why Poland is where that institute is located, which is definitely fun to look into. And there's that information is out there. So I invite people to do that. And then there is this idea that we were attracted to the Bielobrzeski variety that they have and that they've bred and maintained for the last 40 years or so, because it has been historically cultivated for fiber in Europe. And, you know, one of the challenges has been, you know, trying to lean on the institute as a seed provider here in the United States and the representor of this variety, because these kinds of questions about standardization and really agronomic standardization. So what to expect when you plant this variety in different parts of the United States is what I get bombarded with all the time. You know, what is the yield? How tall will it grow? What is the maintenance that it needs? How many seeds do I need to put in the ground per acre? What does a good stand look like? You know, a lot of the initial market here in the United States obviously was for CBD, but it also was in grain. And it makes sense because of our proximity to Canada that, you know, they have a robust grain market, and that kind of flowed down into the United States, particularly the northern United States, when after the 2014 and 2018 Farm Bill. The fiber scenario has been entirely different, to your point, because we're talking about places that they're not connected to us. They're not a neighbor. And those industries have developed, you know, very independent of our involvement for decades. Our involvement, as you point out, is in the consumption of those products. And you know, one of the interesting things is I had some conversations at NOCO where I was talking to a guy who's been doing wool for a very long time, and he started talking to me about micron size and the size of these fibers. And I mean, my eyes kind of glazed over just because it's not my background. You know, I don't have I didn't go to school at a leading polymer and fiber research institute here in the United States, but that's likely a great place to start, you know, is to look at Texas Tech, North Carolina State University, these schools that have historically been pivotal in the agricultural sector in this country for fiber crops and plant-based fibers. I mean, they're the guys that do incredible research and try to get to the heart of what's actually inside that stock and how to use it. So there's excellent research happening with different universities around the country on the polymer and fiber characterization and standardization. And then there's also Patagonia. You know, I mean, Patagonia is a big player in this space. And we saw not too long ago some headlines that basically there has been collaboration between Patagonia and the state of Colorado, Jared Polis's office here in Colorado, to bring over varieties from China that have been grown for textiles, and then to work with the Chinese fiber processors to kind of understand and start to develop a fiber industry. I mean, here in the United States, but particularly with Colorado in mind, and in particularly Southern Colorado. You know, one of the challenges with that, and I know you'll appreciate this, Trevor, is that as we dug into that and tried to learn more, because obviously we want to introduce our variety to them and get it in their hands, is that right now, to your point about no secondary processing, the plan was to grow the hemp here in Colorado and then ship it back to China and then ship it back to the United States to be turned into a Patagonia t-shirt. And, you know, this whole conversation about carbon, sustainability, decarbonization, and what this plant, you know, what the possibility it offers for a non-fossil fuel driven future, that is just, there's a part of that that's just like, whoa, what are we doing here? So.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. And that's, it's funny because that's how cotton works, right? So we grow American cotton here, primarily in Texas and the South, ship it, but there's no cotton mills in the US really. We ship it to China, they manufacture clothing out of it, and then it gets shipped all around the world. So I think people are really going to have to rethink that entire model as concerns about carbon emissions and climate change, you know, take more and more center stage.
All right, John, Mike's to you. What's the solution? How do we get hemp fiber production in the U.S. up and going?
Well, I think something Eric said at the beginning of the conversation is really true, which is you've got to walk before you run. And, you know, we've seen this experience replicated with virtually every other aspect of the cannabis economy, where you see this initial kind of burst of interest and excitement, enthusiasm, and then a bit of a cooling as people realize that it is going to take a ton of resources and some time to operationalize on this new opportunity. And then things start cooking with gas. And I think we are, based on all of the challenges that both Eric and Trevor have spoken about, there's definitely an opportunity here. It's just going to take a while for us to get the infrastructure in place to do this. And I would just add, beyond the, let's call them the supply chain issues that we're facing in terms of getting each module, the production, the processing, the retail and ultimate distribution established. I think we're also facing a bit of an inverse challenge on the consumer side, where there's just not a lot of consumers who've had these products in their hands, who've had a lot of experience with them, and would walk straight to a store to buy them. So in addition to the push from the industry in terms of getting these products out, innovated, developed, and into retail channels, I think this sector needs to pay particular attention to the consumer education piece. The consumers have clearly embraced the fundamentals about the sustainability and impact on potential climate change that hemp could be a solution. I think there's a lot of kind of enthusiasm about reducing the carbon footprint and the kind of good for the earth that hemp can do. But that needs to be matched by, good high quality products that consumers actually want to own. And historically, I mean, there were some challenges, some limitations to the types of hemp products that were being produced in the very kind of low tech, low commercialized environment that this new innovation has phenomenal opportunity to disrupt. But there's a massive consumer education, consumer awareness gap that still needs to be closed, or that will need to be closed in parallel to these products coming to market.
Yeah, it's interesting. Even on LinkedIn, I feel like there is an excitement with consumers about the idea of hemp coming into things. I think I saw it was like a Nike or someone was putting out like a hemp sneaker or shoe, and everybody was like, "Where can I get it?" You know, and everybody wanted to know more. So I think the idea is very appealing and people are embracing the idea of it. I think it's just a matter of getting it there. But changing gears from challenges, New Frontier data predicts the wholesale value of fiber in the US will expand to nearly 78 million by 2025. So let's talk about what are some of the factors driving that expansion. Eric, I'll throw it to you first.
There's so much in there that is contributing to that. And part of it is just, as you said earlier, the myriad of uses that can come from this. And we've been a little bit focused on the textile piece in this conversation, but you know, likely the textile piece here in the United States is probably going to be one of the last to really to fully develop, if there indeed is the opportunity for it to fully develop. And there absolutely might be. But there are a lot of hurdles, as we just discussed. And I know New Frontier recently put out, you know, kind of what the more short-term and medium-term fiber applications that we might see here in the United States come to market quicker. So these things like building materials, which, you know, need to be paired with standardization as well, to come back to Trevor's point, by folks like ASTM and making sure that hempcrete indeed does meet building codes. That's something that can come to market pretty quickly. Paper pulping is something we've seen be successful on a smaller scale here in the United States, and that's likely something that, you know, could be developed rather quickly. The plastics piece is interesting, because I could see that absolutely being more of a medium term application that comes to market, but it could happen pretty quickly, especially with the kind of interest that our group has seen out of Michigan, which again is a leader in plastic production and polymer production. The name of the game this year, and I think why we saw so much interest turn to fiber, apart from, you know, kind of the end of CBD and at least the end of the hype around CBD, but even more so interest in fiber than in grain, is the animal bedding market. You know, animal bedding does not require a lot of processing to get to that material. And the thing that concerns me a little bit, although it's tapered off, is we don't probably need too much production to meet the demand that's out there for animal bedding. And this is exactly what we saw in CBD, when you saw all these people producing something for a market that at the end of the day was a big market. And there is a lot of consumer consumption of CBD products. However, with the right genetics and the right extraction and the right manufacturing, a strong supply chain, which we truly have on the extraction side of hemp, you can fulfill the market demand that exists right now with not that much production, way less production than we've seen, you know, acres devoted to cannabinoid production in recent years. So I think the animal bedding market is great. It's a very short-term win for getting everybody paid throughout the value chain for producing hemp fiber, but there's not a ton of margins in animal bedding, if we're just being honest, way less so than a Patagonia t-shirt, which, you know, runs you about $50. And how much is really needed for the market may have been a little bit inflated. You know, we may have had a couple of companies who are looking at animal bedding and can bring an animal bedding product to market, but they were going to a lot of different farmers with those contracts. And ultimately that leads to oversupply if you're not careful.
Trevor, what are your ideas on what's contributing to the expansion?
I'd say there's three big reasons that I see to be optimistic. Number one is the climate change issue and reaching carbon neutrality. So I read a really cool statistic the other day. Now, at this point, 50% of global GDP has signed up to achieving net zero by 2050. The thing about decarbonization is that it's an inevitability. It's a true inevitability. Climate change is real, unfortunately. And, you know, so long as we keep emitting more carbon into the atmosphere than the atmosphere can safely absorb, the warming is going to continue. The disruptions from the climate crisis are going to get worse and worse and worse. So we can either reach net zero emissions now ahead of time as a result of smart policy and adopting low carbon technologies, or we could wait until things get so bad that we can't keep the economy running. So if you accept that decarbonization is an inevitability, then all of a sudden hemp fiber looks very attractive. Hemp grows by photosynthesis, which stores carbon in the structure of the plant. And then when that plant is made into a product, it traps that carbon inside the product itself. So when you see a product that's made out of hemp fiber, you know, that product is quite literally made by taking CO2 out of the atmosphere and turning it into something useful. So I'm very bullish on bio-based materials. The second reason to be optimistic, and Eric touched on it briefly, is the versatility of the plant. So hemp is one of the most sustainable crops in the world because it's one of the most versatile crops in the world. There are more than 25,000 different low carbon, low waste products that you can make out of hemp. And, you know, we're finding new ones every day as finally, for the first time in 80 years, serious academic research is being done on hemp in universities and labs around the country. You know, it's not unfair to say that hemp fiber is one of the only renewable resources we have that can really hold a candle to petroleum in terms of its versatility. Then the last reason to be optimistic, I would say, that's contributing to growth is awareness about deforestation. So there's a report by the environmentalist Andy Kerr you could read that states it pretty clearly. It says there is an irreconcilable conflict between conservation and fiber production on forest lands. We can't keep on harvesting forest lands as our primary source of natural fibers and get the economy to net zero emissions at the same time. They're mutually exclusive. People tend to assume that fiber for, you know, U.S. paper and construction products, because the fiber for these products has historically come from wood, that fiber can only come from wood. But the reality is that if just 2.6% of farmland was dedicated to the cultivation of industrial hemp, we could displace 75% of the annual U.S. wood consumption. That would be the equivalent of hemp being a crop, you know, in the tier of cotton. So, and, you know, and what's interesting about that is that it wouldn't necessarily mean competing with food production. A lot of the criticism around things like ethanol and bioplastics is that you have to take an acre of farmland that could otherwise be feeding people. But with dual cropping, hemp could theoretically provide both natural fibers for use in industry and nutritious seeds, which are high in plant-based protein, at the same time.
Thank you for that. I like it. You did the three things. I don't know if you know this, but that's Mr. Kaguya's go-to. Three things.
So, you're rubbing off on me, John.
I know. So, John, do you have a fourth to add, or do you want to do your own three things?
Well, no. Maybe the only thing I would add, because I kind of endorse everything that Eric and Trevor have said, kind of taking these drivers for market growth and market expansion that have been raised, and really putting them on a global basis where, you know, as we look internationally, I've just spent, you know, 15 months in Africa. And in addition to kind of the sustainability imperative and the opportunity that presents, you know, there's this pure kind of local economics that are driving the interest in the potential for hemp and harnessing the potential for hemp. So whether you're looking at countries that historically produced tobacco and have watching cigarette demand fall dramatically, kind of this major cultural change that's happening, as you're seeing countries across the world whose agricultural sectors, whose economies writ large, have been decimated by the COVID-19 pandemic and are looking for any new source of economic stimulation. And then as you're looking at climate change influenced food insecurity, you know, there's a lot of places where people are living subsistence living or living subsistence conditions and are looking for any kind of new crop, new innovation that can help them either put more food on the table or bring more money home. And across kind of all of these applications, the kind of economic stimulation, the thousands of applications for which hemp can be used, the fact that it has both industrial and potentially medicinal value, all of these make just hemp a phenomenally attractive kind of new entrant into a lot of countries' economies, as folks are really struggling across health, across kind of social empowerment and development, and across the environmental / sustainability issues, really does seem to kind of fit across these big issues really, really well.
Awesome. Well, I want to go around the horn because I know we talked about a lot of different uses for hemp fiber, but want to get your, each of you, what's your most promising at this stage in the industry development for this year? So Eric, I'm going to kick it to you. What do you think is the most promising end use?
I absolutely think it's going to revolve around herd, and I'm not sure exactly what it is, but I can kind of piggyback on something that Trevor said, which is there's a couple pieces to this, and I'm not as organized, I guess, in my thinking this morning to do it in a 1-2-3 kind of way, but I'll try to do the best I can. In order for the plant to really have that carbon sequestration potential and utilize that in the way that we want to see it utilized, you have to not be wasting parts of the plant. In other words, if you're harvesting for grain or growing specifically for grain, and then you're leaving all those stalks out there and even burning them or something like that because you don't have anything else to do with them, then you're releasing that carbon, you know, back into the whole equation out there. So you really do need a way to capture that carbon. And so what we've really seen as from a seed provider perspective, and I apologize for the emergency sirens here in Denver, Colorado, is this move towards dual purpose fiber and grain. And you need the right genetics in order to be able to accomplish that. A lot of the varieties that have been historically cultivated for grain are very short varieties. They don't provide a very strong harvest for the short fiber, the herd, if you're going for grain. But, you know, we have a variety that does provide this. We're pretty confident about the Hinola variety, where you really can capture, I would say, you know, the two main components of the plant that we can really utilize right now, which is the food and the fiber, but particularly the herd. And so we're seeing a lot of folks this year who are growing for that. And as the farmers, you know, from that real farmer perspective, it's absolutely critical in order for them to get a good ROI. And this is really, you know, this comes back to the whole equation that we're kind of trying to explore right today, which is, this is a chicken and egg scenario that we're in right now. In order to really justify huge amounts of capital to flow into the processing infrastructure here in the country, you need a lot of acreage. But in order to get a lot of acreage, you need that processing infrastructure. That is a heck of a dilemma that we've been facing previously and we're still facing today. I totally agree with Trevor that necessity is the mother of invention, and that, you know, this plant is going to emerge more and more and more and permeate into the consciousness of our entire society as a great ally and tool in the fight for a sustainable future. So I think we have that wind at our sails, but this chicken and egg scenario is really tough. And all of the farmers that we deal with, they're not going to add this crop into their rotation. They're not going to take the chance on hemp unless they feel that they can get paid. And the best way to kind of mitigate the risk of growing this crop this year is to grow for grain and for herd. And so I think that's a beautiful thing. I think the idea that we can use the whole plant, not waste any of it, and have multiple streams that one crop is going into, I mean, that really checks all of your boxes for getting the farmer paid, building their confidence to continue growing, you know, having those processors get material in their hand that they can work with and start to develop more products for the end market. And you're keeping that carbon in the plant and then in the end product so that you're not just having a bale sit there on a farm for a couple of years until the farmer finally decides, I don't want to store this anymore, I'm just going to burn it. Cause that kind of just negates this whole carbon perspective. So it's a lot of different forces at play, but yeah, there's every reason to be optimistic. And I think this is absolutely going to be the year of fiber. It might not be the year of the kind of fiber production that would really get large scale investment interested in investing in the US fiber industry. It's going to be the year that we learn a heck of a lot more and we start to actually bring some more products to market that can get everybody throughout the value chain paid, including us as seed providers, and the farmers and the processors, and then ultimately the retail and distribution and end product suppliers.
I love it. Trevor, you're up.
That was really well put, Eric. Well, when I think about end products, I think about two things. I think, you know, how close is it to price parity with existing substitutes, and how much of an impact on total emissions could this end use have? So, you know, if you go by emissions, if you say, okay, what are the hemp applications that can take the biggest chunk out of emissions? The three biggest categories are construction materials, bioplastics, and automotive components. Construction materials, especially, that's probably what I'm most bullish on right now. They can play a big role in decarbonization because they have the longest carbon capture period. So if you think of, you know, hemp animal bedding, like we were talking about, well, yeah, that's a big market, but the carbon in those products is going to end up right back in the atmosphere in no time. If you think of a hemp car component, maybe that carbon is going to stay trapped for 10, 15 years, you know, depending on how long the car lasts. But if you look at construction, houses last a long time. You know, hemp-based insulation, hempcrete, that's going to keep carbon trapped for 50, 60, 70 years before it has to be replaced. And, you know, while these materials are still a little ways off from price parity, there's a lot of reason to be optimistic. Number one, you know, lumber prices are up more than 130% since last year because of the wildfires. Yeah. And we know that there are going to be more and more severe wildfires in the near future. So, you know, it's getting closer and closer to price parity. At the same time, government initiatives are starting to ramp up that are making it more and more expensive to emit lots of carbon. So at the same time that wood is getting more expensive, carbon neutral alternatives are getting cheaper, which is why, you know, we think there's going to be a lot to look forward to in this segment.
Awesome. John, over to you.
Yeah, I mean, I just think the one of the things I am excited for, one of the things I'm keen to see how it plays over the next little while is this idea of there being a hemp moonshot. I think it's going to take a couple of companies to make a big investment, to kind of signal to the market that they think there's enough of a long-term opportunity here to start drawing people into the space. You know, it's almost kind of what Tesla did with the electric car and the long-range battery. We have seen very promising early entrants into this space. And, you know, to Eric's point, whether it's Patagonia, whether it's Levi's, whether it's BMW in the vehicle components, the automotive components. But you know, I don't think yet we've seen as many kind of flagship companies come forward with what feels like a moonshot hemp product. I think we're close. I think there's a lot of kind of tier one innovation happening. But I'm really excited to see who's going to be first out the gate with something that puts hemp squarely in our applied materials firmament. From then, I think once the ball starts rolling, you know, we don't know whether it's going to be the chicken or the egg that goes rolling down the hill first, but whichever gets going, I think really will kick this off. And I share Eric's assessment. I don't think this is the year that we see hockey stick type of growth in the hemp fiber space specifically. But what I do think we'll end up seeing is, you know, a lot of acceleration down the learning curve and people figuring out how to do this and how to do it efficiently, how to build scale. And then over the next couple of years is when we see that innovation that happened in 2021 materialize as full kind of full scale commercial production.
Well, it seems like we have a lot to look forward to. Well, we are almost out of time, but before we head out, any final thoughts on the industry outlook predictions from any of you all?
Yeah, I could start. You know, I would just say, despite all the optimism here, if you are a farmer, don't grow any fiber unless you have a purchase contract ahead of time. There are very few processors up and running, and the ones that are running are still relatively small. And the last thing this industry needs is another oversupply. Not to mention that when there is an oversupply, farmers tend to get left holding the bag. There's a lot of farmers out there who justifiably have a bad taste in their mouth when it comes to hemp because they didn't make out as well as they would have liked in CBD. And, you know, it's a real risk that happens to fiber as well. If you are growing fiber this year, though, I would stress the importance of data collection and collaboration in the industry. Good data is very much lacking right now. And without it, it's hard for the industry to progress. So if you're growing fiber this year, you know, make sure you're taking notes and don't be afraid to share those notes with the rest of the industry.
You can message Trevor on LinkedIn. He is open to all your messages. Eric, anything from you?
Yeah, well, it would be so much fun to just sit here and hang out and talk with you guys all day because there's just so much to talk about. I think, you know, kind of to echo that little bit of the cautionary tale that we just heard from Trevor, and to tie it back to something that John mentioned, global economics. Yeah, we live in a globalized world, and it would be really foolish to not understand the context for the United States and for the American farmer that it exists within on a global scale. And of course, we know that. We know that with every other commodity and every other industry, and we have to bring that awareness to hemp as well. And I really, you know, have to bring that up because the price of other ag commodities this year is they're the highest they've been in such a long time. It is not the year where the guy who's been growing corn for the last 30 years is going to try a new crop when he can get paid more for corn this year than he has in the last couple of decades. So, you know, with the incoming of the Biden administration, the opening up of global trade relations that have been kind of on ice for the last couple of years, yeah, there's a global demand for the other crops that we produce in this country. And that hurt the hemp production that we're going to see this year for grain and fiber. And that's okay, because that's the context of being in a global, you know, a global economic relationship with all these other countries. That's not going to be forever. That's going to change. The price of those commodities is going to fall, and then we're going to probably rapidly get back to a place where farmers are actively looking for that new crop to go and chase. And at that time, all the learnings that we're getting this year, this walk year, this tier one innovation year that John is talking about, that's going to come in a lot of handy. And hopefully we won't see this oversupply, because the oversupply is ultimately is going to drive a lot of other farmers who do communicate by word of mouth. The guy down the road grew hemp last year. He didn't sell it. I'm not going to grow it. So we really need kind of that, you know, it's a positive. And then also, you know, I know we didn't really touch on it, but, you know, when you do look at China and just being the lead fiber supplier for hemp textiles in the world, you know, don't ever think that once we do actually get to this amazing point that we're all trying to fight so hard to get to, where we have a U.S. produced hemp fiber material for a t-shirt, what's going to happen in that moment? You know, you have to be forward thinking enough to realize that the minute we can produce it here, and believe me, everybody in that supply chain and value chain is going to want to be paid appropriately for producing that American grown hemp fiber t-shirt. What's going to happen on that global level with the existing supply chain that's been around now for the last decade, where we've been importing all that hemp fiber from? They're likely going to drop the price. And that's why that price parity that Trevor's talking about, it's important for us to be thinking right now, as we're watching all these things develop, have the insight that you can only get from looking at data, like I know you guys do all day long, and you're so great at analyzing it. That's how you can kind of see a glimpse of the future. And we kind of need that. We need that glimpse of the future, the leveraging of data, to just be smart, you know, figure out where we fit into that context and how there are so many forces at play. And we have to kind of figure out how to work with those forces rather than putting ourselves in position where we're working against them, because we kind of have seen what's happened. So there's a lot to be positive about. And yeah, I really appreciate talking with all you guys. Eager to hear John's parting thoughts.
Yeah, I want to hear into his crystal ball and see what that has to say.
Hard to top what Trevor and Eric have said. My only kind of addition may be that it has been really interesting to observe the developments in the hemp sector over the past few years, past 2 years in particular, and really come to this conclusion that we're now at the point where it certainly feels to us like this is now a question of when, not if. And so while even as we concede that there's a huge amount of process that still needs to happen before we're talking about a robust industrial hemp economy in the US, in our opinion, there's enough of these kind of core foundational elements for the industry to get there. The key question is what's going to happen between now and then. And you know, I think Eric has made a really critical point about, you know, trying to predict the future and trying to anticipate what's going to happen. And I would just say that we have, from other aspects of the cannabis economy, some really good referential guides on how these markets behave. as you try and get out the door, as you try and go from zero to 60, when you have initially very little infrastructure in place. This, like most things cannabis, or like all things cannabis, is going to move quickly. And so for folks who think that, you know, there's the luxury of time sitting on the sidelines for 3 to 5 years before starting to pay attention to it now, we would just caution that, that the pace of change and innovation that's going to happen over the next 18 to 24 months is going to be on a scale and of a pace that for those who figure out a path to navigate this sector early, it's going to mean for some very, very lucrative opportunities as this market gets activated. Going to be a messy, messy middle between now and then. But for those who are clear on the strategy and have clear lines of sight, I think there's very, very considerable opportunity at the end of this rainbow.
Well, John and I, you and I have talked about, you know, people that make it in the cannabis industry are like, you know, grinders, they're in it, they get their hands dirty and they really have to work their butt off. And it's not that green rush that everybody thinks it is. So it sounds like it's going to be the same for hemp. Well, that's all we have today. Thank you all for joining us today. Eric, thank you so much for your time. And thank you to our listeners. Please be sure to like and subscribe to the podcast, hit the notification bell so you don't miss another episode. And if you haven't already, please sign up for our free weekly newsletter at newfrontierdata.com/newsletter-signup. And you'll get some notifications for some upcoming webinars about hemp. We will see you next time. New Frontier Data provides this podcast for entertainment purposes only. Nothing stated in this podcast should be taken as legal or financial advice. Reference to any specific product or entity does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by the company. The views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. Views and opinions expressed by New Frontier Data employees are those of the employees and do not necessarily reflect the view of the company or any of its officials. If you have any questions about this disclaimer, please contact our legal department.